All right. What's going on, people? People, I'm Martin Hawk, your host of this podcast, From a People Perspective. It's a podcast about fascinating people, the stories of how they got to where they are, and a glimpse of where they're going, all from the lens of people operations. Before we dive in, we got to thank our sponsors that not only help make this podcast possible, but they also support the People People Group. And for the last 7 years, we've been running the People People Group and grown it to become North America's most engaged HR recruitment and operations community. We're dedicated to sharing best practices, elevating each other, and collectively improving the employee and candidate experience for everyone. We host regular events, socials, webinars, we provide resources, and we're doing some pretty cool stuff in 2024 that you should keep an eye out for. So because of these awesome sponsors, membership is free. So if you're interested in joining 4,500 other People Ops professionals, head over to thepeoplepeoplegroup.com and apply to become a member. If you're interested in supporting or sponsoring the community, feel free to reach out. If you can't find me, then your internet is broken. If you're a startup with a leadership or executive role and you need it filled by pros, look no further than the Leadership Agency. They're an award-winning recruiting for startups in Canada, the US, and the UK. Jamie, Elizabeth, and their whole team have been OG supporters of us, and I've experienced the difference of working with them over other agencies and have used them numerous times on tricky searches. If you need a boost to the day-to-day at your company, and on top of that, you have the delightful challenge of figuring out how to have an engaged hybrid workplace, check out Wavy. They've cracked the code on fun, engaging hybrid events so you don't have to. Check out joinwavy.com after the podcast, not right now, we got to focus, and learn more about them. We've also got Chocolate Soup. They're the coolest employee recognition program provider ever. And your employee recognition scores will go up if you engage with them. How could you not, with customized Lego figurines for all your employees with bricks that come and arrive at their doorstep during their milestones within your organizations? Really interesting concept. Check out chocolatesoup.ca. We've only got a few more folks, so keep listening. Singer Steinberg Group Benefits Specialist. If you're in the Slack community, just tag Adam Singer if you have a question about benefits for your employees. He's the most patient and helpful person I know. And on top of that, he's Mr. Referrals. If he doesn't have the answer for you, he can't provide you what you need, he will help you. He will introduce you to someone who can. I've gotten a few referrals from him and they've become key partners for me in both the People People Group and the fractional consulting that I do. Spring Law, check them out. Virtual support for largest and smallest employment law issues. If you're in the Slack community as well, just look up the Ask Legal channel and you'll see a bunch of people from the community asking legal questions and receiving answers from folks at Spring Law. Finally, I mentioned it, but I'm a fractional recruitment and HR consultant along with my business partner, Monica Sarkar. We just spun up the consulting business about a year and a half ago. And yeah, if you need any interim support on the fractional recruitment or HR side, feel free to reach out to myself as well. And we're also going to give you a reason to reach out to Sarah. You're going to have a million reasons to reach out to Sarah as well. She is our guest today. Sarah Breckelmans, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So you are the owner, operator, founder of Brightly.
Yes. Mighty team of one.
Mighty team of one. And diving into all the things about your past and history is exciting. I think it's taken we just mentioned it before the podcast started, but like a year for us to like figure out how we can connect and do this. We've been, we've known each other through the industry hallways for quite some time, but we've never really stopped to talk and figure out like, hey, what is it that you do? So I'm really excited to chat with you today. Before we dive into all the nitty gritty business stuff, let's learn a bit more about you. You have Enterprise Rent-A-Car as your first gig.
Yes.
On LinkedIn. And I have so many things to say about that, but is that really your first gig, or what was your first paid gig?
My first paid gig was at Great Canadian Bagel. So I used to serve a lot of bagels.
Amazing. I love that. Are they still around?
There's like, I'm from London, Ontario, so I think there's one there, but I have yet to see one in Toronto. But I'm sure there is, but I haven't seen them. So they might be gone.
There was one in Guelph. I loved it. The chocolate chip.
Oh, yeah.
Double toasted with butter was like my go-to. Probably didn't help with any of like the nutritional like needs I had as a teenager, but like that was my jam. I loved Great Canadian. My dad loved Great Canadian Bagel. I am sad that there's not more of them. I just like, yeah, you've taken me back there. That's cool. What did you learn there? Like what did you, you know, beside like all the bagel lore you could imagine, like what were your takeaways? What lessons did you learn from them?
Actually, a lot. I had a boss that I would define as a little bit scary and aggressive. And just made it seem like he didn't like anyone. But then I really learned that, you know, if I push back, he might, to see how he might respond differently. And he did. He ended up like loving me. He's given, my mom still goes there and he always asks about me. He still owns the shop. And I think the biggest thing I learned is like, when you have an opinion, say it, like say it in an appropriate way. Probably learned that over the past 20 years, how to better communicate my opinions. But if you think something, like speak up, manage up, you know, don't hold back. He ended up being an incredible mentor for me, like going into high school and college. And in the beginning he was incredibly frightening.
Okay. I love that. I was worried for a second. I'm like, oh, this is gonna be a sad story.
No.
But you turned it around. Like, I'm so happy to hear that. And like also like leadership training. Forget about it. Just go get a gig at the Great Canadian Bagel for a little bit. Work at so-and-so shop. And I guess you got to cross your fingers on who you get as a boss. Totally. That's probably, it was the individual, less about the bagels, right?
Correct. Yeah. Although they were good bagels, so.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, then, I got a few albums behind me. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Nope. Oh, I was just going to say my other gig from that was working in construction.
Okay.
For my family's business. I was a flag girl. So if you ever, you know, going through a street that has construction happening, I was the one with a stop sign. So that was interesting.
Okay. Nice. The thing that comes to my mind is there's this weird, I don't know. This is probably just highlighting my neurosis, but I get really steamed when people like pass you on the highway and they don't just like do the hand raise thing or some form of like, I see you, I hear you, I appreciate the kindness that you have afforded me on the road. And what I always found really interesting is like people holding flags on construction sites or in a construction area. Some of them were just like, you could just like, it's a tough gig, I imagine, to just stand out there and just like, that's the thing. Your sole purpose is to be a stoplight, essentially. Some of them were super creative. Like, I remember one trip from BC to Toronto, and there was like a flag person who was just like super animated, making everything fun. Like, I was a little kid in the back seat, and it was just like, you're making the best of this. So I guess my question to you is, what type of flag person were you?
I'm not going to lie. I was not a good one. I was the one that got really bored and I'm like, oh, wait, oh, they can go. Oh yeah, sure.
Oh, dear.
Needless to say, I did not go in the direction of the construction industry. I wouldn't say that was not my favorite job. I will say that.
No. And you know, you've gone through some iterations in your career, and we'll talk about that in a second. You've got a zero calorie pass for the day. Maybe it's bagels. I don't know. What are you munching on?
Oh, probably pizza. I could eat pizza. If I could, I could eat it breakfast, lunch, dinner, snack. Which is why I never have pizza in my house, but
that's fair.
If it was zero calories, 100% pizza for sure.
Let's get specific. Okay. What pizza joint? Oh. What are we getting on the za?
So we've actually made a habit of, or a tradition, whatever you want to call it. On Fridays, we actually make our own pizza. So we don't make the dough. So yeah, I won't say that. We get it from a local Italian shop. But I'm big on pesto pizza. I love ground sausage on pizza.
Okay.
And sorry, you asked about where I get it from. My bad. I'm going deeper.
This is how serious the pizza goes.
True.
Yeah,
it's true. Gusto 101 in Toronto, some of my favorite pizza, or anything that's like a wood fire oven, basically.
Wood fire. Okay. All right. Our household is like a Domino's household at the moment. We do have Descendants pizza, which is like the deep dish, which I'm a huge, if I could get deep dish every day, I probably would. I think that's, I don't know what my answer to that is. I'll have to go on another podcast one day and figure that out.
I've never met a pizza I don't like. So I'm, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to be as critical with pizza as you have to be with candidates and people, right? So
yeah, yeah.
There's no filter. Everybody, you get the job.
I wish.
And finally, pretend you can only ever listen to one album for the rest of time. Which one do you choose and why?
Fleetwood Mac, Rumors. For sure.
Okay.
It's weird. It's just always an album that stuck with me, like grew up with it, took it with me going on. And then we got a record player. I think I play it like once a week or maybe more, making dinner. It's just like a nostalgic, great album.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. That is a clutch album for them. There's like a whole documentary on the yes. making of the album too. Like that's a thing. It was a production, to say the least. Mm-hmm. What songs? I'm terrible with like albums and but like what songs are on that one? Like all their crazy hits, right? Like
Go Your Own Way.
Yes.
One. Yeah. Dreams. I don't know all their names, so I just put the album on and it just goes.
You listen.
But I know all the songs.
I don't have a record player. I'm getting one, but I'm just like, I need something for the background for video calls. Like this work from home thing is like, is going to be here for a bit. So I'm going to spruce it up a bit. Thank you. But like, yeah, that it, I was looking like I was handling them because I'm like, I can't play these, but I was looking, I'm like, they don't like music just doesn't, I miss this part of music. Like even CDs, right? Cause I'm a little bit more, that's like closer to the, mm-hmm. like, I don't know about tapes. Like I grew up with tapes, but the albums are just like, that's an art piece. Like that's you know, there's the lyrics, whatever they do there, the creative thing. Like there's a whole thing, and now it's just like, oh, it's on Spotify. We launched. Here's a picture of us. Blah blah blah. Like I don't know. I feel like we're losing something.
I feel like people are going back. I mean, at least we did. Like I didn't have a record player ever, and then we got one about a year ago. And yeah, I don't know. It's just something different about it.
100%. Are we going to go back to cell phones one day? Who knows? Who knows? Right? Whatever. Okay, let's dive in. You just finished listening to Rumors, and you're heading to work at Enterprise. You did the manager in training course as a recruiter who came up through the agency world. Like, I just seeing that green logo on your profile means, like, I got to talk to Sarah, because it's their training is next level. Like, the quality of people that come out of there is just like every other B2B recruiter that I've worked with is just like people from the car industry, Enterprise, and like there's better ones, but like Enterprise was like, if you went to Enterprise, you were going places, and you clearly have. But I'm curious to hear what your take on that perception is.
Yeah, so it's interesting. Enterprise led to, like you probably guessed, to a lot of different things in my career. I left it and then went back, but yeah, it will hopefully all make sense. But I started Enterprise through an internship during university. I was in a business program, and it was, to be quite frank, the only reason why I wanted it is because it was back in my hometown in London, Ontario. They're like, oh yeah, yeah. You can go back, and not in Waterloo, where I went to university. And it ended up being the best move I could have done. Like, I didn't really realize what I was getting into. I had never done sales, but it's the type of company that really hones in and puts the customer first in like everything. Teaches you sales skills. They literally send you in a car to go pick up customers, and you have to drive them on your own, which to me at the time was super scary. I'm like, I have to sit in a car like with someone I don't know and try and make conversation with them. it was weird at first, but it got me out of my shell. I met amazing people, many who I've still friends with, and have gone to different places, but yeah. It was an incredible program that got my initial interest in sales. And it's actually what, you know, despite another, we can talk about another career area I went into, it drove me to recruitment, actually.
Yeah. Well played. I love that. Was that wasn't intentional, was it?
No, it wasn't.
Chef kiss. I just did the chef kiss emoji because we haven't gotten to video podcast yet. But like that was magnificent. So it drove you to recruitment. Does it, like, anything from Eli or Argyle or MedBuy to, like, you know, are there any like lessons or takeaways from those companies?
Totally. So it all bridges together. But basically, after Enterprise, I spent all my years at Enterprise were spent while I was in school. And I had decided after university that I actually wanted to move to Toronto and do a post-grad in marketing and public relations. I don't even entirely know why, just marketing always stood out to me. It's something that in theory I thought I wanted to do. So I wanted to move to Toronto. So I went and did it. Quit Enterprise and got an internship through that program with Eli Lilly Pharma Company, working on public relations on a number of their over-the-counter medications, one being Cialis. And through them, the agency that worked with them hired me on full-time because the pharmaceutical company couldn't take on staff for interns. Went over to the agency, did a lot of work on marketing programs on cancer treatments, other over-the-counter medications, included like media relations, a lot of writing, events, that type of stuff. And then over those next 5 years, admittedly, I shifted around a lot. Like, I went to different companies and different marketing roles. Nothing felt like a fit. And in my last marketing role, I was back in London, Ontario, because I felt that's where I needed to be, at a medical supply company that supplied medical supplies for all the hospitals in Canada. I had a pension. It was like the role that I thought I wanted. And I was like, I still don't like this. I'm not passionate about this at all. So
yeah,
I did some self-reflecting and was like, I don't think it's the companies and roles that aren't a fit. It's me. I'm not a fit for marketing. I like marketing. I love the theory of marketing. I love the impact that it makes. But at the end of the day, I don't like doing marketing.
Interesting.
So I kind of took a step back and was like, well, what do I want to do? And the conclusion was I wanted to return or shift somehow back to sales. Because I love what I did at Enterprise. I love the engagement with people and whatnot. So I started talking to headhunters, and that's kind of how, well, started talking to headhunters because they had media relations or media sales openings, and they thought that I could be a good fit just based on my background. And I will put it bluntly, I had a terrible experience with multiple headhunters.
Okay.
I think a lot of candidates, unfortunately, have had bad experiences sometimes. But I was ghosted. You know, I went to third interviews, never heard back. Didn't feel like some of these headhunters knew the roles or even understood my skill set as a marketer. And I will say, very naively, like young Sarah was like, I can do that. I can do that way better. I'm going to change this. Again, nice. Naively, like now what I know in recruitment 10 years later, there's obviously a lot of nuances that I had no idea about. But I was like, you know what? I'm going to become a recruiter. So in my apartment in London, Ontario, I started cold calling creative recruitment agencies. They didn't really want to talk to me because I didn't have recruitment experience. I lived in London, Ontario. They're like, who is this girl? But finally I kind of figured out this angle of how to pitch myself, and I ended up getting two offers, one nice. With a creative group at Robert Half, who I'm sure you obviously know of, and moved back to Toronto and jumped into recruiting basically. And I immediately knew, it was like, this is exactly where I need to be, as sappy as that sounds. But I just like went right in and loved it all. I'm like, oh my God, this is the career I've been trying to find. It's, and yeah, and here I am 10 years later.
10 years later, we're recruiting. What I love about that, and there's a million things to double click on, but what I love is that oftentimes the story is I got tapped on the shoulder, or it's like this Illuminati, like, you know, bait and switch, not a bait and switch, but like, oh, I was interviewing with a recruiter for all these jobs, and then the recruiter said, hey, you know what, you'd be great at recruiting, why don't you come work for us, kind of thing. And this is the reverse. Like, you were like, no, I want this, and you kicked the door down and you figured out how. What was the the positioning thing that you changed, or that like reset and like, okay, cool, now they're finally taking me seriously? Or
yeah, so as I started talking, a lot of people very graciously did informational interviews with me. And what I didn't know before talking to agencies, which I don't think a lot of people do outside of the HR, you know, recruiting industry, is that recruitment agencies are heavily sales. Like, it's recruitment, but there's it's a sales environment. And so when I started to hear that, it was like, oh, Enterprise. Like, I have this great sales experience. Why don't I leverage that? So right. I started pitching myself as, you know, I'm a marketer by trade, but I have an incredible sales background. I think I could do this. And it was specifically at Robert Half. It was, the person that hired me, Deborah Botteneau, she had already hired people that had been in Enterprise and had been successful. And right. So it clicked for her. And she was like, I'm going to take a risk on you. I'm going to put you in this role, and you're going to have to pick up a lot of the information on your own, but here you go.
Interesting.
Yeah.
ironic, I guess I'm curious, this is a little bit of a sidebar from your career, but from the lens of like your recruitment experience, because that's my favorite thing is the shot. Like that is the, you don't get to do it all the time, because sometimes clients are like, no, we need person to have done X, Y, and Z for X number of years. Da, 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 da. And yeah, we get that. Well, that makes sense. Like that's part of the thing. But every once in a while, you come across someone and you're like, they got to meet this person. They're incredible. In your career, how often do those types of hires happen from like the agency side or from the like partner side versus like internal? Because internal, it's easier because the risk isn't associated with an additional cost, right?
I would say it happened. Sorry, just to clarify, you mean like people I've recruited into roles where the client's taken a risk on like kind of a different profile? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, just in general, like how often do you see clients taking risks on those types of high potential hires that kind of go against like the JD they originally threw at you?
Yeah. So I'll kind of, there's two answers to that just because of two different areas of my recruiting career. In my earlier days as a recruiter, I was working on a lot more junior roles. And often enough, it was more about tenacity and drive and passion. So there was a lot of key placements that I was really proud of because it was, you know, people that were new to Canada or had just came out of school or, you know, had something just different that it was a je ne sais quoi, but the client was like, yeah, okay, I'll take a risk on this.
We get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love but those.
They wouldn't things. Have explored.
Exactly. And I love those placements because many of them excelled and it was I was able to actually give someone an opportunity. Right.
Yeah.
Which is what I think we all love about recruitment, but sometimes you're not always able to do that. Right. So,
yeah.
Now in my later career, like now, for example, it actually happens more than you would think. It doesn't mean that the person doesn't have experience, but I find a lot of clients will come. I work, you know, as you know, I work mostly with startups. Most of them, or a lot of them, will come and say, we want a marketer from this industry at this level, you know, very specific specs, which is very normal. If they're working with me, they want the full checklist, basically. But often enough, they end up hiring the person that shows a lot more drive, a lot more passion, that probably doesn't come with like three or four of those check marks. And they learn through the process that, yeah, okay, they might not have like everything, but they'll make up for it in their drive and what they want to learn.
Yeah. Okay. Going back to you, you've been doing recruitment for 10 plus years. You've got your own firm. You're focused on marketing. And before the podcast, like, what are we going to talk about? And immediately it was just like the first thing you suggested. It was like, yes, that is going to add value to the listeners, the people that are either in HR or in recruitment, but maybe they're generalists in terms of like the roles that they're working on, whereas your focus for the most part of your career has been marketing, right? You niched down in terms of, okay, well, I've got a background in marketing, so I'm gonna lean on that and that's how I'm gonna break in. And you haven't really, so I guess you haven't diverted from that. It's been that's I think what anytime people ask the question, well, hey, do you like, I'm looking for referrals for like a recruitment agency to work with, who should, like the first recommendation I go with is like, you know what you're getting into if you've worked with agencies in the past, you know, you've got a budget, you've got this in mind. The end goal is to hire a person you want to go with someone as niche as possible, because if you're going with the like broad spectrum catch-all circumstance, then you're losing all the benefits. And I guess, you know, if that's a lesson in itself, then great. But for those of us who are internal and we're working on marketing roles, and maybe we just picked up a new marketing role, what are the nuances that you've learned about marketing recruitment that someone who is more of a generalist could or should pick up on in order to be a bit more successful within the marketing sphere?
Yeah. I'll kind of narrow it a little bit to more startups, because that's where I'm playing the most. So to all the points you made, I agree. Like that's the value that I hope I bring to clients. And it's also how I look at, you know, if you're going to hire a recruitment partner, I think niche in any area is better than a generalist, but a lot of generalists do really great too. So with all that to say, marketing has really changed over the past, you know, the 10 years I've worked in it, but also in the past 5 years specifically, because marketing is no longer just brand. It hasn't been for a long time. There's a lot of elements. There's a lot of areas and better metrics that we can use to actually see how marketing is making an impact on a business. And when a tech startup, for example, hires a marketer, they are looking for that person to actually push the dial on revenue. So why I say that is that the way that most companies have been evaluating marketers is not aligned with what they're actually looking to hire. And so what ends up happening is that there's a lot of mishires. There's a lot of false expectations or misaligned expectations. And if you look at the tenure for marketers, especially at the leadership level in startups, it's quite short. Like sometimes it's getting better, but it's been sometimes under 2 years. And it's, you know, it's a mix of candidates not being matched with the right role, but a lot of it comes down to the interview and it's the questions. So sorry, a lot of my clients will say, you know, our biggest challenge is that, you know, marketers are really great at marketing themselves. And like, we can't get past that. I'm like, yes, but no, like you can get past it with the right questions. I just don't think most companies aren't asking the right questions. It needs to be, you know, more intricate and more questions that are drilling into more than just conversion rates. How did they do things? Mm-hmm. How did they change things? What kind of testing did they do? Like really getting into the nitty gritty of their metrics and understanding what those were as much as you can to understand, can this person actually push the dial in the areas that I need them to in a business?
Yeah. And in, I think that's like oftentimes the issue, right? Is that, we haven't had success in this role. Why? And it's less about the availability of the talent, but not being able to assess the talent properly because the job hasn't been scoped properly because you're not hiring. It's easier to hire salespeople just because you tend to hire a lot of them. So a sales leader is constantly in hiring mode, whereas marketing, you get the opportunity to establish your team and have a bit more of a secure, like, this is the team we're moving forward with, you know, one person will move on. It's less of that. It's less of the kind of churn that you might see in a sales team. Mm-hmm. And so I guess that means the hiring managers, despite having hired people, might not have like the best, like how does a recruiter internally kind of fight that? Like what questions, like if they don't know the marketing sphere, right? And they haven't like really partnered with the marketing leader. That's the first thing. Like that's the like, okay, cool. Like establish some sort of partnership. But what you're saying is interesting to me is like, even they aren't like thinking about things in the right way. And that's where you come in as the advisor, be like, actually, it sounds like from what you're saying and what you've told me, but like, hey, how did like, if you haven't mentioned how this ties back to revenue, we're going to fall flat if we hire the person that you've described. So I guess what have you found to be like helpful when having those conversations or like getting them back on track with the right profile and whatnot?
Yeah. That's a good question. So I think if I'm working with a founder, for example, a founder or a CEO, that's usually where the conversations at least start. And a lot of times there's, especially if it's the first marketing hire or even the second, they don't have a lot of marketing resources. It's, we need to find someone that can do everything. And I get it. Like, and there's a lot of posts out there, and for a lot of roles, it's like, oh, this person wants to hire a VP that does this, 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 and this. They're actually looking for a full department, like, which I love those posts. And it is very true, but it's very natural for, you know, a founder or whatnot to go into, well, we need everything done for marketing. So we need them to do everything, which is okay, but there's a different way to look at it. And the way to look at it is, you need a leader that knows how to hire and outsource the right things to the right people and the right roles and where the priorities are. That's what you need. Because at the end of the day, you can find the person that does quote unquote everything, jack of all trades, master of none. You're setting yourself and that person up for failure, hands down. But the goal is to actually look for someone that can tell you and is self-aware enough and knows where they play, what areas they play in best, and says, hey, I play best in driving product marketing strategy, demand generation. However, when it comes to events in public relations or what have you, this is where we're going to need to go. I'm going to hire someone, you know, whether it's external to do content on this, this, and this, or our next hire after myself is going to be this hire. And a lot of that full information doesn't come out until after they do a full analysis of the current marketing that exists. But what they should really be evaluating for, instead of, hey, this person can do everything, is what are they really good at? What would they say we need to outsource or start hiring for? And where do we start?
Yeah.
And that's probably, those are the most common conversations I have.
Okay. That's interesting, because I feel like the natural, it's the worst problem in tech and just any company is like, oh, we've got a problem. A full-time hire is going to solve it. And that full-time hire typically leans towards, like, you can't hire the generalist to do all the things because they're just going to do all the things poorly. And maybe their favorite things, which might not even align with the main goal, they're going to do the main things that they're good at well. But it sounds like the question to really ask these, not only the founders, but the candidates, I'm reiterating what you kind of said here, but like, it's really based, it's let's share our business, let's share the information. Like give you as the candidate as much information about our business with as possible. And then you come back to us with what your recommendations are and see first off, like how quickly and aligned it seems. And then B, I guess, is like to your point, like what are you outsourcing and what are we doing ourselves as a business? How is that going to get done? And how much budget, so to speak, do you believe we need to like accomplish what we need to with everything else? Because it's like absolutely impossible for a person to do all the one thing. But I don't know that those are like the naturally part of the conversation regularly.
Yeah. And that's where that whole, you know, marketers know how to sell themselves, and it ends up being fluff because If you go to someone who wants a job and says, hey, can you do this? Can you do this? Can you do this? They're probably going to say, not all of them, but some of them will say, yeah, I can do that. So you're getting the yes person. Yeah. And so if you frame the conversation that way, that's where it could potentially go. But if you frame it as, tell me the areas that you would need support on, and let's talk about how you would structure that or how you would get that done. It's basically, you want to find someone that's resourceful. You want to find someone that can get, quote unquote, scrappy. I know that word is wrong way too often, but but scrappy in the sense of not like getting in the weeds of everything. It's finding the right people to do the work that's needed.
Yeah. It's interesting because you've described, like, initially as you were talking about this, I immediately thought of, I'm like, oh, this is Richard Branson's fault. Right? Because he's like, if somebody offers you an amazing opportunity, but you're not sure you can do it, just say yes and then learn how to do it later. Like, what an inspiring quote to be like, yeah, like, I should just fake it till I make it kind of thing. And so you have all these people that are like, yeah, Richard Branson, awesome. I'm just going to fake it till I make it. And then those cause mishires. But the mentality, to your point, right, is like scrappiness is like, there are people who can fake it till they make it really well. And then there's the ones that are like, oh yeah, this was just really well done. And they want the job. So they're going to say everything that they can to get the job, and they're good at marketing themselves. How would you vet between, like, how do you look, what are the things to kind of distinguish between that person and the other person?
Mm-hmm. So first off, I don't fully disagree with, you know, the Richard Branson fake it till you make it.
No.
But in a different way, like, for example, I love when you have, you know, someone that's in a director role or, you know, and is ready for that next step. And they're ready to go to that next step, right? Or they fake it till they make it. They've taken on responsibility. They've taken on managing people in a different way, mentoring people to try and get to that next step. That's what fake it till you make it means to me. It's taking that immediate next step in your career, in your current role, and expanding it, and then going after that next role. I think that's great. But if you're saying that you're really good at a certain area, not just in marketing, this could apply to other roles too, but in a certain area, and you really need support on that, that's great to say it in an interview. And I tell this to candidates all the time. That's great. Like, awesome. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to get the job. It's another thing to do it. And I think if we could look at a lot of these hires during COVID that happened when the market in, what was it, 2020 and 2021, where there was such a high demand for a lot of different tech people. And, you know, they were hiring, you know, people that were maybe not fully ready for the next role, but they said they were. So they hired them. A lot of those people got burnt out and quit or didn't work out because they didn't talk about the support that they needed. So I think that's a big lesson, but I did go off track there in terms of how I evaluate. Do you know Jason Lemkin?
Yeah.
Yeah. So Saster, he writes a lot of content. His team writes a lot of content. And one thing that he wrote. It's
a big conference.
Yeah, exactly. And he has a really good blog actually for, you can actually type in like hiring specific for certain roles and tons of content pops up. It's a really cool site. And the one thing that's always stuck with me that he wrote about is when you're interviewing a marketing leader, it's asking them, like, where would you focus first? What are the first two areas you would focus on if you were to get into a role? Mm-hmm. And most often those two areas they mention first are the areas that they're most proud of and where they have the most experience in. So if you start digging into that, you'll find that if that is how they end up presenting themselves, let's say you're hiring for a demand generation, a role that's focused heavily on demand generation, but they're talking about content and product marketing, maybe that's not the person that's really, although they say they can do it, it might not be the person that can actually do it really well.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's almost like the right answer to that question is like, where would you focus first? Deserves a question, many questions in response. Yes. Like the marketer should be like, well, what's this? What's this? What's this? What's this? Okay. Exactly. If this, and this are your plan, then this is my plan, as opposed to like, well, I've made all these assumptions about your like, and then it feels like, yeah. Interesting. Mm-hmm. How, kind of going in a bit of a different direction here, but how has, like, because of the shift in the market, maybe this is selfish for myself as like a fractional consultant, but how has the landscape changed from your perspective, like engaging with clients and whatnot? Like there seems to be chapters or acts to what's like the post, you know, post pandemic environment and market.
I mean, my opinion honestly changes every month because it's so different, but, but I will say, you know, if you're talking about like the height of when the market was so crazy busy, which is when I started Brightly, it was crazy. Like every recruiter was crazy busy. I mean, there was just, I've never seen in my 10 years of recruitment, I had never seen it. Just so much demand in such a tight market. So there's that. And obviously it kind of went the opposite this past year, or a lot of people, for a lot of recruiters it did, and the market overall, a lot of unfortunate layoffs, which is a direct impact of that really busy time, right? And I think a lot of startups have learned from it. I don't think it sucks that that's how we had to learn, but it is what it is. I think companies are being a lot more cautious with their hiring. So the past year, I think a lot of companies actually just froze on a lot of hires. Of course, unfortunately, 100%. A lot of them were doing layoffs. And then for any hires, it was kind of more like either replacements or something they had needed before. And then you had your companies that were a few companies that were still getting funding or, you know, had made some hires. But I think going into this year, I am seeing it getting busier, but companies are still really diving into, okay, what do we actually need in this hire? Let's make sure if we're hiring these people, like, let's just not make a hire because we have funding. Let's not make 60 hires because we now have all this money, and just like, you know, that rocket mentality is, I think that's going away. And I think it's a good thing because there's just been so many hires that happened over the past few years that, you know, it just hasn't landed in the success for the company and the success of the people in those roles either. So yeah, I think this month I'm finding it interesting that a lot of companies are pressing go on hires that they were very, very cautious of and have now said, okay, now's the time for us, but we're still going to be careful, which sometimes means a lot more picky. But, you know, I think it's for the benefit of both the company and any candidate going into a role. So,
Last question before we sign off here, and it's more of like a tactical one, but I think it's a skill that I brought from the recruitment world to, from the agency recruitment world to internal, that a lot of folks don't get the chance to exercise. And it is getting comfortable with pressure testing the hiring manager. And you do this as a necessity. It is a pure survival skill as an agency recruiter, because you've got, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 requisitions, maybe it's 5, 10 different clients, and you're going to spend your time and energy. Your success is predicated on you spending time and energy with the people that are actually going to make a hire versus people that think they need to make a hire but haven't figured out their profile and you can smell it from a mile away. What are your tips for folks internally on how to suss that out? Because it happens just as much with, if it happens to external recruiters, it happens to folks internally as well. It's just as frustrating, right?
So, the way I kind of test like their temperature on how eager or not eager they are to make a hire is really kind of putting out there, okay, we're going to start tomorrow. If we get started tomorrow, let's work back. Like, when is this person in the seat? When are you prepared to onboard this person? And then let's work back from there. And I say that I asked that question for two reasons. One is to obviously project manage and get a sense of the timing that, you know, we have for recruiting and whatnot, but also to see the reaction, because if they fumble and don't know, then more questions need to be asked. It's, are you exploring the market or are you ready to actually dive into the market from a hiring perspective? And if the answer is, well, I'm not sure or whatnot, the advice is, you know what? It sounds all great to explore, but when you actually want to make that hire, you're going to be back at square one again anyways. So let's revisit that and talk about, would you actually want to start making that hire?
Yeah. And this is what you can do to explore. Just let's put the posting up. Interview people on your own. If you make a hire, fantastic.
For sure.
But
start networking. Start talking to your colleagues or, you know, whatnot. That would be the better way to go than to obviously start recruiting.
Yeah. This is just a bad candidate experience as well, because they're 100%. They're figuring that out on their own.
Yeah.
Awesome. What do people need to know about Brightly? What do people need to know about you? And, you know, when should they tap you on the shoulder?
Yeah. What should they know about Brightly? Well, I am incredibly passionate about recruitment, probably too much. But I say that because I'm the type of person, I'm always happy to have conversations. I think a lot of people, you know, and I get it. If a recruiter reaches out to a client, you know, on LinkedIn, it's like, no, I don't need any help. Like, I'm not paying for help. I don't need a recruiter. Yeah. And that's totally cool. I get that. But I also just love being there as a resource and helping the startup community or anyone hired for marketing overall, because I think that sometimes the roles can be really challenging. So even when people don't, or companies or recruiters, you know, in the network, you know, don't necessarily need actual help, but just need someone to pick their brain on, like, how should I evaluate this? Or how can I talk to the hiring manager about what skills they actually need? Or, you know, a lot of the things we discuss in this podcast, I'm always happy to chat. I rather help someone do better at their job and be successful than, you know, just not. So, yeah. But then overall, you know, anything marketing related, I'm always happy to help with, whether it's formally or informally.
Awesome. And yeah, focused on marketing. That covers a broad range. I see on your LinkedIn for Brightly, you've got like UX, UI as well. And it's kind of adjacent, like product and like how broad you kind of stick to those, because product and marketing and product marketing, they got together and created a new department. It seems like it sometimes, like, that's all of that stuff basically. Yeah.
Yeah, I would say, you know, everything under the marketing department is pretty obvious, but things that are a little bit, you know, to the side of marketing would be product management, data analytics, which usually ties to marketing analytics. And then I would say the most, you know, outside of marketing is people and talent roles. That's just come naturally, but also usually clients have worked with me on a marketing role and then they've asked me to work on that side. So, but yeah, marketing is my jam, I would say.
Nice. Awesome. And best way for folks to get in touch with you, I will leave that in the description of the podcast and in our newsletter. But for the record, what is the best way?
Yeah, you can definitely connect with me on LinkedIn, or you can email me. It's just sarah@brightlysearch.com.
Perfect. Awesome.
Thanks so much
for your time today, Sarah.
Thank you. This was great. I appreciate it.
Awesome. All right. And for those of you still around, like I said, you will have access to all the links in the podcast. As a reminder, if you are not already a part of the People group, you probably should be. So check us out. And on top of that, that's basically it. Until next time, may all your candidates be awesome and may all your emails be read thoroughly. Cheers.